Chapter 5. Over the long decades of the Years of Peril, the barge cities of Constanix II had evolved through a bloody process of weaponry and countermeasure, attack and defence, so that they had each become near impregnable to the assaults of the others. Forced by bloody stalemate into consensus, the rulers of the Tech Temples had not waged war since. Yet still, there remained an ordained way to wage war between cities, a process that Korax had studied carefully, seeking to overturn the dogma of centuries of received wisdom. The energy shields of Atlas and Iapetus rendered long-range attack a waste of energy and munitions. In order to maximize its capabilities of bombardment, in an effort to overload an opponent's defenses, a barge city would first have to weaken its own shield to allow its guns to fire out, rendering it vulnerable to a swift counterattack. Instead of such artillery exchanges, the approach of Atlas to Iapetus was heralded by a battle in the skies. The energy fields provided no barrier to aircraft, and both sides wove tangled trails about each other as they attempted to bring their foundation-penetrating payloads over the enemy cities. If one side gained the upper hand, they would be able to target the power field generators of the enemy, neutralizing their defenses and leaving them open to crushing waves of artillery and the devastating blasts of volcano cannons. Another option was to destroy the engines and grav matrices that kept the enemy city afloat, but Korax had no desire to see Iapetus plunged into the sea. Not only would the loss of life be incredible, there was no guarantee that Delvia and his allies would not simply escape the destruction of the capital by gunship or other craft. As the two air forces duelled overhead, scores of strike craft exchanged missile, bolter, and heavy cannon fire, both attempting to pierce the cordon and pave a way for the heavier bombers and ground attack craft. Explosions blossomed against the dark clouds and the burning trails of wrecked fighters and debris cut downwards towards the tossing sea. "Why are we slowing?" Korax asked, as he noticed the soft nudge of deceleration. "I gave no such order."
"Until Iapetus's energy field has been weakened, we must stand our ground," replied Loriak. "Power is being diverted to air defense turrets in case of enemy breakthrough. Delvia's aerial assets outnumber ours. We must take precautionary measures."
"Continue at full speed,"
Korax barked at the gaggle of tech adepts standing by the city's engine controls. He turned back to Loriak.
"I have no intention of waiting while we lose the aerial battle."
"On our current course, we will collide with Iapetus,"
said the Mago Critarch, though whether this was a protest or simply an observation was unclear.
"That is my intent," Korax replied. "We will treat this as a boarding action, perhaps the largest the galaxy will ever see. Atlas will ram Iapetus, and then we will move ground forces over."
"Ram?"
The Magos seemed put out by the simple word.
"It is more logical to render Iapetus's defense grid incapable and then dock at lower speed to precipitate the ground assault."
"War is not always about logic,
Loriak," Korax said calmly.
"But if the enemy energy field is still operational, we will have to drop our own defenses to prevent a feedback cycle of possibly devastating proportions."
"How devastating?"
Loriak turned to the other tech priests, and there followed a brief crackling exchange of lingua technis as they consulted with each other. Shaking his head, Loriak returned his attention back to Korax.
"We are unsure. Possibly catastrophic. Highly inadvisable."
"War is a series of intentional catastrophes, Mago Critarch,"
Korax said sternly.
"Continue at full speed. Course set for Iapetus."
No further protest was forthcoming, though more exchanges buzzed between the tech priests as the order was carried out. Checking the main viewer, Korax could see Iapetus clearly, only 3 kilometers distant. The grey of the turbulent seas between the two barge cities seemed to be growing smaller with a glacial slowness, but in truth, Atlas was closing at nearly 20 kilometres per hour. Even if the merging of the energy shields did not cause widespread damage, the impact certainly would. Alarms cried shrilly in the control chamber, and banks of lights flashed red. A Lex mechanic issued a proximity warning.
200 metres to power field overlap!
Sirens sounded out across the city once more, and the comnet was filled with warnings for exposed troops to brace themselves and take whatever cover was available. At 100 meters, the ionized air between the two energy shields crackled, while the sea beneath began to churn, issuing fountains of acidic steam clouds hundreds of meters into the air. At 50 meters, arcs of colored lightning rippled across the narrowing space, the miniature storm boiling between the cities, cracking and thundering like an artillery barrage in full effect. As the outer edges of the two fields touched, a kilometer out from the prow of Atlas, the lightning formed two massive domes, one above each city. The sky seethed with energy and sparks danced over Korax's skin. Several tech adepts stumbled and fell, two of them crying out as the electromagnetic charge permeating the atmosphere overloaded parts of their cybernetic bodies. Loriak's voice projector emitted a high-pitched wail, and forks of electricity coruscated along his bionic arm as he staggered backwards. Korax grabbed the front of his robe to prevent the tech priest from falling, feeling a surge of voltage up his arm at the contact. Dark veins throbbed beneath the Primarch's pale skin. The temple was at the epicenter of the electrical storm, a miasma of power swirling about its summit. A twin tempest engulfed the main precinct of Iapetus, and the barge cities shook as generators set into their foundations overhead. Finally, they could take no more of the titanic pressure. Atlas's starboard field generator exploded first, wiping out two empty tenement blocks and an abandoned manufactorum, in a blast that rocketed debris half a kilometer into the air and showered dust and debris across two districts. A second detonation erupted in 7th District at the rear of the barge city, roaring out across the ocean, sending a kilometer of dockworks and quays arcing down into the sea. Similar explosions were racking Iapetus, toppling buildings and sending plumes of flame into the tormented air above the capital. The combined energy fields exploded out with a deafening boom, sending waves as tall as a titan rippling out across the sea. Dogfighting aircraft were thrown into spins and stalls by the blast.
"Open fire! All batteries!" snapped Korax,
even as the tech adepts dragged themselves back to their posts.
"Target enemy weapon arrays and the city perimeter. I want a blanket of fire to cover our approach."
From turrets atop the main temple and spread through the city, macro lasers and volcano cannons roared into action. Shells, the size of battle tanks, arced into the air towards Iapetus, while ruby-colored beams sprang into life between the two cities. Rocket launchers sent flaring missiles streaming across the gap by the score, twisting and turning towards their designated targets. Flurries of explosions lit up the nearest sectors of the capital where the beams touched, cutting through armored turrets and plated embrasures. The shells of the cannons fell, flattening buildings in a line across the port districts. Another second later, and the rockets struck home, their warheads punching into the foundation of Iapetus before exploding, rending immense craters from the surface like bullet holes in flesh. Airburst shells and submunitions showered incendiary destruction onto the already wounded city, setting fires as gas lines and fuel tanks detonated, while weaponry depots were torn to scattered rubble. Delvier and his cohort were slower to react. The fourth salvo from Atlas was landing even as the capital's surviving guns returned fire. Atlas was rocked by the impacts, shuddering under the tonnage of shells descending upon its streets and buildings. Korax gritted his teeth as rockets slammed into the armored sheath of the temple building, and he was glad that one of his first orders had been to plate over the ostentatious but vulnerable windows. Thick ceramite and ferrocrete cladding held, though the temple shook under the impacts, sending several servitors and mechanicum adepts sprawling. The stormy exchange of artillery continued as Atlas closed with her target, lessening as a counter-battery fire from each city destroyed the cannons and emplacements of the other. For more than 5 minutes, the bombardments continued until both barge cities were nothing more than ruined wastelands, dotted with shells of buildings like ragged teeth, destroyed power plants, and factories belching smoke and fumes. Korax knew that there would be casualties, but he did not need to know the details. The point of commitment had been reached the moment they had set course for Iapetus. Now all that remained was to endure the pain and see his charges through to victory. Later, the losses could be mourned, but for the moment his entire intellect and will was bent towards the destruction of his enemies. Agapito had clambered up to the cockpit to look out of the canopy after the first shell impacts. He had seen many sights in his battle-strewn life, both stirring and dismal, but the sight of two cities blasting each other to pieces pretty much eclipsed them all. Perhaps only a full fleet bombardment from orbit could match the sheer amount of firepower being unleashed. The jagged, tangled remains of Iapetus's docks loomed large in his view. The capital was trying to rise up, hoping to avoid the coming collision, but Atlas was ascending also, driving on directly towards the enemy-held city. Only a few hundred meters separated the two gigantic craft, and the commander made his way back to the main compartment and lowered himself into the brace harness. "Get ready for launch! Pilot, I want to be airborne before these two bastards meet head-on."
"Affirmative, Commander," replied Stance.
"This is Agapito to all commands. Prepare for assault." A series of confirmations echoed back across the Vox as he spread his fingers, forcing himself to relax. He pulled his power sword free from the stanchion above his head and laid it across his lap, fingers creating a rattling tattoo along its ebony sheath. The waiting was almost over. Agapito felt the Shadow Hawk taxiing out of the armored bunker where it had been hidden, and a few seconds later felt it rising up into the air. He turned his head to look out of the slit-like viewing port beside him. There was almost nothing to see through the haze of fire and smoke, but where the gusting winds parted the clouds, he watched as Atlas rammed Iapetus. The barrage-ravaged prow of the barge city ploughed into the equally ruined dockyards of the capital. Spars and the wreckage of loading cranes bent like grass in a wind, while armored plates sheared into each other, sending meter-long splinters spinning through the air. As the city seemed to drop away beneath him, Agapito could see more, chasms opening up along the roads, splitting the gutted remnants of buildings. A huge cloud of dust was thrown up by the impact, engulfing the Shadowhawk and sending it lurching to port, while debris rattled against the hull.
"Losing trim! This is going to be tricky," Stans warned.
A moment later, the turbulence threw the dropship to starboard. Restraining harnesses creaked, and the Raven Guard muttered curses as they were tipped over, the hull clanging with impacts, the groan of straining metal reverberating around them. While Stans wrestled the craft out of its wild roll, Agapito glanced out of the vision slit again. Tall buildings on both sides of the collision were toppling towards each other, slow and majestic, yet terrible to witness. He knew that much of Atlas's populace was safe deep into the foundation of the city, but had Delvia shown similar concern for the citizens of the capital, it seemed unlikely. In all probability, thousands were dying. The concern was soon replaced with another emotion. Agapito flexed his gauntleted fingers and wrapped them around his sword and smiled as the calm hatred of righteousness gripped him. The smoke bank, blotting out the sky above Iapetus, was cut by the shape of a dozen sleek craft arrowing towards the centre of the city. Shadowhawks and whisper cutters slid almost invisibly down through the miasma, yet this was no stealth approach. Heavy weapons fire spewed from the craft as they skimmed across the rooftops and angled down the ruined streets, spitting death into the traitor Scutari beneath. Plasma bombs rained down from a stormbird, while two dart-like interceptors raked along the wide roads with anti-tank rockets and autocannons. Agapito wanted the enemy to know exactly where he was. Jets blaring, the Shadowhawks descended into the central plaza, dominated by the mangled remains of great abstract sculptures once raised in praise to the machine god's artifices. There seemed to be not a building left intact. The pavements and streets, scattered with debris, blocked in places where taller edifices had collapsed to their foundations. The dropships hovered a few meters above the uneven ground, while their cargoes of black-armored warriors disembarked, spilling out in a wave with jump packs flaring. Whisper cutters circled noiselessly overhead, piloted by simple machine spirits that relayed visual, audio, and scanner information across the strategy net to the Raven Guard leaders. With practiced ease, the assault force dispersed, moving into the buildings, while heavy weapon squads laid down covering fire from amidst the rubble, driving back the disorganized and scattered defenders. Quickly, relentlessly, the Raven Guard pushed on, grenade blasts and flamer bursts heralding their progress as they moved from one shattered chamber to another. There were bodies crushed amongst the debris, but Agapito ignored them as he led the first squad into the next set of ruins, the tumbled remains of a wire production facility. Articulated conveyor belts and lifting engines protruded from the piles of broken masonry and twisted plasteel rebar. A heavily armored combat Servitor stood watch from above, unleashing a stream of fire from its heavy bolters as the commander ducked through the remains of a doorway. It seemed unlikely to have clambered up to the higher floor by itself, and must have miraculously survived when the rest of the building had come crashing down. Bolts flaring from the rubble around him, Agapito cut to the right, drawing the fire of the mindless half-man. He fired his jump pack and leapt up to the next story as return fire from a squad on the ground floor converged on the sentry machine. The white beam of a las cannon sheared through its tracks, scattering links and the molten remnants of broad-spoked wheels, slicing the Servitor from waist to neck. Moving up further, Agapito sought a vantage point from which to view the city. Reaching the pinnacle of a shattered stairway, he was able to see back towards Atlas and across the city to the towering edifice of the main temple. The lightning insertion by the Raven Guard had achieved complete surprise, but the defenders of Iapetus were now responding. A trio of lightly armed walkers rounded a junction 300 meters down the street. They had bulbous sensor lenses like glittering spider eyes and an array of communications dishes and antennae. "Recon walkers," the commander told the company, "let them see us and then destroy them." Sergeant Vasio led his squad out into the street, bounding with their jump packs from one heap of rubble to another directly in front of the enemy spy vehicles. The recon walkers turned as one, false eyes sparkling as they locked on to the moving figures. Half a minute passed as Vasio and his warriors disappeared into the ruin of a flattened hab block opposite. Enough time for the scouts to signal back their discovery. Missiles and plasma fire erupted from the upper levels of a nearby shuttle docking port, punching through the walkers' thin armor with ease and turning them into three smoking wrecks in a matter of seconds.
"Good. Designate main temple as bearing zero. Insertion point is grid one. Company, relocate to grids 4 and 6. Kanat, Garza, and Hassel, break right and set up a welcoming party by that communications tower at the end of the roadway."
The ad hoc company moved as ordered, forming a rough perimeter around a square kilometre of city with a central plaza at its heart. It was not long before the Scutari arrived, the lead elements transported in tracked open-topped carriers that were easy targets for the heavy weapons that had been moved into position to greet them. Part cybernetic warriors spilled from the burning remains of the two lead vehicles, while the others quickly tried to reverse, only to be caught in a crossfire of plasma grenades and bolter fire from a pair of Raven Guard squads that had moved in behind them through the cover of a demolished HAP complex. The rest of the counterattacking force approached more cautiously. Agapito moved from position to position, ensuring that the lines of sight of each squad were maximized, creating killing grounds where possible, leaving some routes open to encourage the enemy to venture further forwards than was safe. He had studied under Korax himself and attended to the fine detail of his force's disposition with the same care with which a tech priest might administer maintenance to the circuitry of a cogitator. As he moved, he assessed the enemy's strength. About 500 infantry moving ahead of a dozen battle tanks and three support guns. The vehicle commanders were understandably wary of advancing too far into the mess of broken buildings and haphazard rubble piles, instead sending in the infantry brigade to clear a path first. Agapito detailed three squads to follow him as he dropped down to ground level. They gathered in the shadow of a leaning rail stanchion. The rest of the bridge had fallen to block the road behind them. Picking their way sure-footedly through the debris, the Raven Guard circled to the left around the incoming squads of infantry. Concealed by the pall of smoke, using their heat-detecting auto-senses to track the progress of their foes, they waited. A minute later, the Raven Guard stationed around the enemy line of advance opened fire, tearing into the infantry with their bolters. Several dozen were cut down in the opening salvo. Not willing to stay in the open, the Mechanicum soldiers broke ranks and moved into the cover of the shattered buildings. And it was then that Agapito made his move. Splitting his force, the commander led the charge into the enemy, power sword in one hand, plasma pistol in the other. Though their bonded plasteel breastplates and bionic limbs made the Skitarii superior to the unaugmented soldiers of the Imperial Army, they were no match for 31 warriors of the Legiones Astartes. Agapito did not use his pistol, instead hewing down a handful of foes in the first few seconds of the combat. Fragmentation grenades exploded ahead of him as another squad charged into the fray, shrapnel from the charges combining with splinters from the littered masonry in a deadly firestorm. In a hail of bolter shots, chainsword swings and savage punches, the Raven Guard cleaved into the foe without pause. Those enemies that chose to retreat from the assault strayed into the fire of the legionaries still waiting behind, and in minutes all but a handful lay dead or dying. A few black-armored legion warriors lay amongst the fallen, taken out by lucky blows or desperate hacks from the power weapons of the Skitarii squad leaders. But Agapito quickly calculated the kill ratio to be a satisfactory 70-1, or more. Robbed of their infantry support, the tanks withdrew, covering their retreat with a barrage of shells from main guns and a hail of lasfire from secondary weapons, creating even more dust and debris, but inflicting no casualties upon the Raven Guard. As the growl of engines receded, Agapito could hear the thump of larger guns in the distance, the main advance of Atlas's own troops. 500 infantry and 3 scout walkers was nowhere near enough damage to ease the attack of the Mechanicum acolytes. The commander needed to make even more of an impact if the enemy were to be drawn into a full attack. He activated his command link to the patrolling whisper cutters overhead, half of his visual display flicking from one to the next as he built up a sense of the surrounding enemy forces. A sizable combined column was advancing from bearing 170, almost directly opposite the approach to the tech temple, about a kilometre away, and coming closer. They were of little concern, for the moment. Of more interest was the Warhound-class scout Titan picking its way along a rubble-strewn street 2 kilometres to his left at bearing 265. With it came assault guns and at least 1,000 infantry, many of them with Praetorian upgrades, supported by tracked rapier laser destroyers, mobile rocket pods, and other heavy weaponry. "Regroup, Grid 7," he commanded, shutting down the link. "Shadowhawk Command, interdiction strike on Titan advancing through Grid 4-6. Assault group, follow attack vector 8-2-2-2-3. Stealth approach. It's time to make our presence really felt."
"Progress is too slow," growled Korax, turning an angry stare towards Loriak. "Your Skitarii have to make ground quicker and push the enemy towards the left flank."
"I shall pass on your instructions, Lord Primarch, but they are facing stubborn opposition."
"The longer you take, the more stubborn it will get. Advance quickly, and the defenders do not have time to reinforce their positions against your attack."
Loriak said nothing, but simply bowed his head in acquiescence and returned to conferring with his fellow tech priests. Korax glowered at the main display. The bulk of Atlas's forces had been committed, and still they had made no more than 4 kilometres into Iapetus's streets. For 2 hours of fighting, it simply was not good enough, and the Primarch had expected better. He focused on the rune shapes depicting the locations of his Raven Guard and felt more positive. Agapito and his talons had been making themselves a constant aggravation to Delvir's forces, pushing closer and closer towards the Archmagos's temple, whilst drawing Skitarii away from the fight with Atlas's army. It could not continue indefinitely, though. Sooner or later, Loriak's soldiers would have to break through to Agapito, or the Raven Guard would eventually be caught and destroyed. Korax stared at the screen as if by will alone he could alter the course of the battle. Agapito had lost around a fifth of his command, but now the enemy were taking the Raven Guard seriously. More and more infantry in particular had been streaming back through the streets as if to swamp the Space Marines by numbers alone. Intelligence from the 2 whisper cutters that still remained airborne pointed to a mass assault coming from the right, which would push the Raven Guard towards the ruined dockyards at the city's edge. Alert to the danger, Agapito ordered the assault force to contract on his position, to create a single mobile element that would be able to extract at a moment's notice. The beast that was Delvia's forces had finally been roused to strike with all its power, and it would not serve the Raven Guard's purpose to be caught out of position when the blow landed. Leaping across shattered rooftops with his jump pack, Agapito rejoined his warriors as they gathered in the building surrounding a massive wreckage-filled crater. Overhead, the shadow hawks blurred past, becoming concealed once more until they were needed to strike. By the commander's reckoning, nearly 6,000 troops and at least 100 battle engines were now preparing to launch an all-out frontal attack. The Raven Guard would withdraw in the face of the first assault and circle back to grid one of the plaza, dragging the enemy closer to the most advanced prong of the Atlas assault and away from the Archmagos' temple. To confirm the rationale of his plan, he took another look through the artificial eyes of the Whisper Cutters, watching for any detail that he'd missed. He saw nothing unexpected and was about to cut the link when a blur of colour caught his eye, dark red against the grey shroud of smog. He sent a signal up to the armoured glider, turning it in a tight circle to come from the other direction. It revealed red armoured figures advancing through shattered buildings a kilometre away, slightly apart from the main body of defenders. Switching to the thermal view, he counted more than 50 signals, the distinctive heat plumes of legionaries at a fast run. The word bearers had come to deal with the Raven Guard. They were trying to outflank them. The rage started as a swelling of heat in his gut, spreading through his body as the thought of vengeance took hold in the commander's mind. As with the discovery of the Camiel, Providence was offering an opportunity to avenge his fallen brothers on Istvan V. In the Whisper Cutter display fluttered a banner, ragged and soiled, but unmistakably covered in golden script, surrounding a bright red laurel on a white field. Agapito had seen that same banner amongst the ranks of Lorgar's whelps at the Istvan drop site, held proudly aloft as the word-bearers had turned their guns upon their cousins in the Raven Guard. In the weeks that followed the massacre, a brutal 17th Legion chapter commander named Alexis had been dogged in his persecution of the surviving Raven Guard. Despite Agapito's entreaties to the Primarch, every opportunity to strike back had slipped away. But now Alexis had come to Constanix too. Memories crowded into the commander's thoughts, each a tableau of destruction and death clamouring for his attention. His battle brother's cries grew louder in his ears, the smell of blood and burnt ceramite strengthened in his nostrils. He gripped the hilt of his power sword tightly, his breath coming in short, rasping gasps. This was a second chance. Agapito would slay the bearer of that banner and see the colours cast down and trodden underfoot. Alexis crushed, as his own legion had once been crushed. Commander! Lieutenant Cadrill's voice was loud across the vox, filled with concern. Commander, the enemy are moving within range! Every fibre of Agapito called out for him to order the attack, and he knew that the Talons would gladly obey once they saw the target. His heart hammered, and blood throbbed through his body, flushing him with rage. A detonation rocked the building across the street as the first of the Skitarii war engines clanked into range, sending an avalanche of smashed masonry onto the road. Agapito barely noticed the explosion. He was here to avenge, to punish, to kill. Yet at the burning heart of his anger, there was a cold core, formed of pure hatred. It did not fuel his rage, but cut through it, gifting him with clarity, shredding the fugue of ire that clouded his thoughts. Victory is vengeance, the commander muttered.
Please repeat, Commander, what are your orders?
Victory is vengeance, Agapito said, louder and more confidently.
He could see the traitors with his own eyes now, a few hundred meters away, cutting through a bombarded district temple. Beyond them, he spied larger shapes moving through the gloom of the smoke, Mechanicum reinforcements. If the Raven Guard attacked, they would certainly be surrounded, even if they destroyed the word-bearers. Cold, rational hatred won over blind fury.
Withdraw to Grid One at speed!
He issued the order through gritted teeth, as though the words were forcing themselves from his throat under protest.
Affirmative, Commander!
Replied Cadrill, sounding relieved. The Raven Guard ran and bounded away into the darkness, leaving Agapito to stare at the word-bearers in the distance, their banner to the fore.
Tomorrow, Alexis, you gutless coward, tomorrow you find out how the Raven Guard fight when we don't have our backs turned. Tomorrow, I'll show you bastards the same mercy you showed us on Istvan.